It's funny. The fight came to me through my executive producer, Charlie Hewitt. And for Charlie, it's a metaphorical story. He was born and raised in Lewiston, and the fight became kind of a signifier for him. And he saw the 50th coming up, and we talked about it back in November, and we were trying to get some funding for it, and there didn't seem to be much interest in it. And then he came to me in late March and said, "You know, the 50th anniversary is coming up really quick.
Late March is in 2 months ago."
Yeah.
Wow.
And he said, "You know, the 50th is coming up. I really would like to do something." And I said, "You know, my schedule's pretty free. Why don't we try to make something happen? See if we can get some funding going." Because I thought it was worth remembering the event. And then the more I talked to Charlie about the metaphor for Liston Ali, particularly that Neil Leifer photograph and what it meant to Charlie and the way it stands as a metaphor for him in his life to get up and fight, I found a real interest in that. So we decided to go for it.
Now, it certainly wasn't the most high profile or the biggest heavyweight or greatest heavyweight fight in history, but you'd probably say it's the weirdest.
I think that's a great comment, Tom. It was the smallest attended world heavyweight championship fight in the smallest town in history still. And you're right. I mean, it was just such a bizarre thing. From the fact that they got the fight after the attorney general in Massachusetts barred them from holding it at the Boston Garden, they had 17 days to put this together.
Why was it barred from the Boston Garden?
Yeah, there's a bunch of different reasons, and it depends who you ask. And honestly, you know, not vetting all the facts because we only had 30 days to do this film. It appears as though there was a major concern about the fact that they felt like it could easily be thrown and set up a third match. That was one reason.
They were concerned that it would be fixed,
Yeah.
basically. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was one reason. Another thing the attorney general concerned was public safety. Malcolm X had just been assassinated literally weeks prior, and there was rumor that as retaliation, there was a hit squad coming to kill Muhammad Ali in retaliation. So there was concern about that.
So Muhammad Ali was a Nation of Islam at that point, but he was in a different group to Malcolm X.
Correct. He had left Malcolm X's sect and gone with the Nation of Islam. He was proclaiming himself as a black Muslim. He had actually changed his name a year earlier, right after their first fight, the Liston Ali Liston fight in Miami. He changed his name, but in Lewiston, it was the first time he was announced professionally in the ring as Muhammad Ali. So there was concern about that. There was a lot of civil unrest in the country in 1965. The Vietnam War was going on. 2 months prior, they had just marched in Selma. There was a lot of stuff going on in this country. So, you know, you add the speculation that Liston also had mob ties. The state attorney general in Massachusetts basically said, "We don't want it here. We just don't think it's going to be a fair fight. We don't think it's a safe fight. We don't think it's going to be a clean fight. It's not going to happen here." And Sam Michael got the call. Basically, he was in a meeting in Norway. He had just stepped down as the economic developer for Lewiston. And he was at a luncheon in Norway, Maine. And he got a note handed to him that said, "Call Cleveland." And he called Cleveland. And they said, "The fight's been thrown out of Massachusetts. Can you help?" And he said, "Yeah, bring it to Lewiston." And 17 days, he put this fight together.
Lewiston, of course, very small, if probably non-existent black population in those days, so less risk of civil unrest, I suppose the authorities might have thought. And
Yeah, I think that was probably a piece of it. I mean, I think for Sam, he actually was quoted as saying, you know, it could have gone to Portland. And again, not a huge diverse population in Portland in 1965. But for Sam, it was his backyard. So he figured I might as well do it at home, you know. I only got 17 days to pull this off, so I might as well do it in my own backyard. But I think you're right. I mean, I think that was probably one of the reasons he got the call.
So a very hectic 17 days in Lewiston, I imagine. The atmosphere must have been pretty crazy.
Well, I mean, they were moving so quick. There was two hotels in the Lewiston-Auburn area at the time. They ended up contracting with the Poland Spring House up in Poland Springs to establish Liston's training session up there. In fact, he was staying at the Mansion House, and they turned – we've got great footage of him training up there in the film. They turned the ballroom, and they put a ring up, and that was his – that was where he trained. Ali was still in Chicopee, Mass. He was training in Chicopee, and he came up about a week before the fight. He set up at the Holiday Inn out in Auburn. But, you know, that's happening. The press starts arriving. There was more press in Lewiston, Maine. There were approximately 600 reporters, which is more reporters than covered World War II, landed in Lewiston, Maine.
And Lewiston's probably never seen that many before or since.
The people we spoke to just said it was crazy but exciting for them. I mean, it was literally like the circus came to town for 2 weeks. It was just nonstop. People were talking about it. It was in the paper. People were driving out to Poland Springs to watch Liston train. The night of the fight alone was just a celebrity's hoo-hoo. I mean,
Frank Sinatra and Elizabeth Taylor came.
And Jackie Gleason.
To Lewiston.
Yeah. Of course, Robert Goulet was there and managed to butcher the national anthem. And, I mean, there was all sorts of great stuff that went along with it.
I was reading that Liston was more popular amongst people in Maine before the fight.
Yeah, I mean, you actually, if you watch the old footage and listen to the actual broadcast tape, when they bring Ali into the ring, you can hear him being booed. Hmm. You know, in discussions with people, one of them, you know, Charlie Hewitt, my executive producer, or you read any of the great books on Liston and Ali or Ali's biography, Liston was comfortable sitting at the white man's table, and Ali wanted to be his own man. He wanted to be a different man. He threw off a slave name, Cassius Marcellus Clay. He was named after a slave owner.
The announcers still called him Clay, didn't they, during the fight?
Yeah, I mean, it happened so fast that there were virtually no posters for the Lewiston fight. And when you look at the program that was only sold in Lewiston, it says Cassius Clay, and in parentheses it says Muhammad Ali. If you watch the post-fight interviews, they're all referring to him as Clay. The announcers are referring to him as Clay. They do announce him in the ring as Muhammad Ali officially, but anyone interviewing him or most of the papers, the Lewiston Sun Journal articles, the national papers were still referring to him as Clay.
Yeah, and generally what you're saying is Mainers, or probably white Americans generally, were more comfortable with Sonny Liston. Muhammad Ali was a sort of combative figure.
Yeah, I think
adversarial,
it was just non-threatening. How exotic, Muhammad Ali. Right? Lewiston, Maine, 1965.
They probably thought he doesn't sound American.
That's it, right? Yeah. I mean, I didn't, you know, I grew up in Portland and grew up in the 60s. I didn't know anyone named Muhammad. You know, it must have been so exotic. And I think, you know, John Jenkins in the film says, as humans, I think we want things to stay the same. And I think as Mainers, we really want things to stay the same.
You interviewed a lot of people who were at the fight for the movie you made. Did you speak to anyone that reckons they actually saw the phantom punch being landed that knocked Liston out in less than 2 minutes?
No, it's great. You know, growing up, the phantom punch, I thought it was a phantom punch because they couldn't tell if he hit him. I thought that was the reason. It's a phantom punch because no one saw it. Everyone was doing something else. Someone was, you know, paying for popcorn or someone was, you know, fixing someone's coat, or someone was using the restroom, or buying a beer. Literally, everyone you talk to.
No, I've looked at the footage of it, and I can't see the punch going in either. It's really hard to see the angle of the camera. Maybe it is.
One of the great interviews we did was with Bob Russo, and Bob's uncle George was the Maine State Boxing Commissioner, and Bob was a young man at the fight.
Young boy, young, 9 years old.
Yeah, he was. You're right, he was a boy. And
I'll tell him you said that.
And he'll tell you that he actually breaks it down in the film. He's watched, you know, I really respect him. He lives, breathes boxing. He knows it. As far as anyone I know, no one knows boxing better or understands it better than Bob Russo. And Bob actually breaks it down in the fight. And he says, you can see the punch. He definitely hit him. It's whether he hit him hard enough to keep him down becomes the question. Larry Merchant, who's considered the greatest boxing analyst in sports history, has done all the great fights for HBO and that sort of stuff. If you look at the famous Neil Leifer photo where Ali is standing over Liston, and you look between his legs, there are two men standing up. And the one further back is a very young Larry Merchant. And Larry will tell you, I had the perfect view. Excuse me. The phantom punch was not a phantom punch. He hit him. He hit him, and he went down. It's as simple as that.
So. Okay. But whether he should have stayed down, maybe the Attorney General of Massachusetts had a point.
Well, the interesting thing is what lots of people don't know, and I didn't know until I started doing this, they got back up and started fighting.
After that photograph.
Yeah, they reengaged. So at 1:44, the punch happened, and somewhere around a minute 56, they're back up and fighting.
Oh, it took him longer than 10 to get up, didn't he? He shouldn't even have really been allowed to get up that first time. Joe Wolcott proving himself a better boxer than a referee, perhaps.
Well, part of the problem is that in boxing, they can't start the count unless the opponent's in a neutral corner. And it took Ali, not only did it take him a while to get into a neutral corner, he started to wander back out of it at one point. So part of it was Ali's fault for kind of prolonging the count. But they get back up and engage, and you literally on the tape, you see Wolcott walk away from these two guys fighting. And he was deferring to the official timekeeper. And then a gentleman by the name of Nat Fleischer, who was the editor of Ring Magazine, was standing behind him, and he was waving his arms, saying, got to stop it, got to stop it. He's been down for at least 12, if not 20. This fight is over. And that's when Wolcott comes over and says, fight over. 220, 225, somewhere around
there.
But
they fought again after Liston first went down.
Yes.
But did he get put down again?
No. Okay. Wolcott steps in, stops the fight. At about 2 minutes 26 seconds. But it was actually, if you really want to know who I guess officially stopped that fight, it was the editor of Ring Magazine who said, no, this fight's over.
It gets stranger and stranger, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
What effect did it have on people in Lewiston that night? What was the response? Pretty shocked, I imagine.
From all accounts, it was bedlam. You know, you hear these now grown men who were young boys who were trying to sneak into the fight telling stories of guys chomping cigars, walking out and uttering words that in their youth they had never heard before, you know, learning real colorful language. It was bedlam. You heard people screaming, fix, fix. You heard people say it was a fake. At the end of the fight, Ali's not cheered and revered as the champion that we all know him as today. He's still booed at the end of the fight. So it was pretty chaotic.
Yeah. What about the economic impact? Do we know what kind of level that was at? I saw some of the information about the purses the fighters received is very shady. I'm just wondering if there are any numbers on how much benefit it brought to the city.
I don't know how much it brought to the city. I know that the reason they were so desperate to make the fight happen was, you know, today pay-per-view is pretty prevalent. You know, the big fight just happened that was, you know, pay-per-view at $100 a pop. They were so Intercontinental Promotions, who put on the fight, needed the fight to happen because 50 years ago, they were virtually guaranteed $3.5 million. So those guys were making money, for sure. I don't know that, you know, Sam Michael was trying to sell 5,000 seats, and the official paid attendance was just under 2,500. So I don't know that they even broke even on the fight.
Mm. It's not really known.
No, and I think you know I think one of the issues was minimum wage was $1.25 an hour back then, somewhere around there, and the tickets started at $25, $50, excuse me, $100, and couldn't afford it. Week's wages.
Nevertheless, the impact on small working mill town as it was then must have been huge. What about the long term effects of that fight? How's it remembered?
So that's a really great question. For us, that was one of the real draws for telling the story. It was not so much, you know, we like to say that Raisin Ali really isn't a boxing story. It's a story about Lewiston. You know, you got to look at the country in 1965, and you look at Lewiston in 65, and the mills were pretty much peaking out right around then. The Vietnam War was going on, and they were running three shifts still.
But shortly, they're making uniforms for the army.
Yeah. Mm. But shortly after that fight, you know, packs up and leaves, it's not too much longer that you start seeing the mills closing and the decline of Lewiston. So really for us, it's a look at where was Lewiston in 65 and where are they today? And the nice thing we found out is Lewiston is sitting on in recovery. They're on the mend. They really are. You're starting to see young people move back to Lisbon Street, which was boarded up for so many years. You're starting to see an influx of a new group of residents, a Somalian community that's contributing. You're seeing young entrepreneurs opening restaurants and galleries, apartments being renovated over these long boarded up businesses. There's a real revitalization, Lewiston, and it's great to see.
So to continue the metaphor, you could say that unlike sunny Liston, Lewiston did pick itself up off the canvas.
That's absolutely the message we're hoping Lewiston walks away with. We're hoping that everyone walks away with is that get up and fight. Get up and fight.
Okay. Well, Gary, thanks for coming in.
All right, Tom. Thanks.